Welcome back, returning listeners, and a warm welcome to those tuning in for the very first time. You've just stepped into the shadows of Dark Florida, where we uncover the eerie, the unexplained, and the downright chilling. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and I am so glad you're here. But before we dive into today's mystery, I have some exciting news. Coming up on April 5th, I'll be speaking at the Great Florida Bigfoot Conference at the Skunk Ape Roundtable. If you're in the area, I'd love to meet you, hear your stories, and talk all things cryptid. It's going to be an incredible event, and I'd love to see you there. Speaking of stories, if you've had a strange encounter, a cryptid sighting, or anything unexplained that you'd like to share, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. Whether you want to be a guest on the show or just share your experience, my inbox is always open. I am joined once again by Marian Gant, who seems to be a fan favorite. You guys loved her episode. So what we're doing tonight is we're taking some news stories and we're going to talk about everything that has been in the breaking news lately, from the pyramid discoveries to the strange spirals in the sky, all the way back to Bigfoot and some interesting sightings that have happened in the last month. Let's dive right in to the strange and the unusual. We're going to do things a little bit differently tonight. I am joined once again by the fan favorite, Marian Gant. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So it looks like this news story broke about a hidden tomb that was discovered by scientists that were investigating beneath the Giza Pyramid. That's pretty interesting. And I wanted to talk about this article for a couple of different reasons. I feel like the pyramids themselves, they have this just like mystery to them naturally. Everyone's always theorizing, who built the pyramids? Was it aliens? Was it Nephilim? Like, what really happened? So in this article here from the Daily Mail, it talks about that they discovered a sarcophagus that was hidden more than 600 feet below the surface in Egypt. And it's the latest discovery that they've made beneath the pyramids. They actually identified an unknown chamber under the tomb of Osiris, which they believe to be a symbolic burial site that was dedicated to that Egyptian god in the afterlife. And if you keep reading on, it talks about how their findings could literally rewrite history. They used this radio pulse imaging system, and it was able to shoot out, from what I can understand, you could probably help me here with more of that technical side, but that technology shot it into the ground. They were able to read and show hollow rooms, caverns, walls, things that look like a very connected, like a map. And it even shows that 656 feet below the surface of the ground, you have these chambers.
Okay, this is one I haven't seen yet. I was thinking we were going to discuss the one with the 8 pillars, and they thought it would have had something to do with Tesla. I haven't had a chance to look at this one yet.
Yeah, so I think this came out of the same study, but you're right. I think everyone's kind of been talking about the pillars, but what this one does is, using this technology here up in the article, it says that they found the sarcophagus, which, quote, remains surrounded by running water. That's really interesting. There's this 114-foot vertical shaft that goes down into it. So that's like a rendered drawing from it.
Is it the same team? It's the CAFR project. I believe Corrado Malonga, Filippo Biondi. It's the same team.
Yep.
I have my doubts. When they came out with the report of the, I believe it was in the pyramid itself, they found 5 structures or 5 towers, and then underneath them are 8 pillars with spirals around them. They connected to possibly maybe water chambers. Each set of four of the 8 pillars connected to a big room down below. The problem I have is they called it synthetic aperture radar tomography to find this supposedly great discovery. Problem with that is it reads the tiny vibrations from naturally occurring seismic movements. It has a radar that does that. It's only supposed to be used maybe a few meters or less before the surface. It's, you know, for other people that's been used a few meters, you know what, 6-9 feet?
Right.
And the biggest part of it is that one of the team members had to write software a program to interpret the signals. So they've got these signals coming down, or however, you know, if it's from a satellite or something like that, it's, they had to write a program to interpret them. So how do they know that program is interpreting it correctly?
Okay, so you're suggesting that there could be a bias in the programming.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Because other researchers have used ground penetrating radar, which is, can go, you know, tens of meters below, 300 feet or so. But SARS has only been used to, for the top level.
Interesting. So this is kind of like the first time we're seeing it used at such a greater scale.
Yes, and it's based on the interpretation that they're using, which again, I'm not a scientist. You know, sometimes you can, once you learn how to read these diagrams, like a spectrogram when you're doing audio, once you learn how to read it, it makes sense to you. But the fact that they've jumped to these fantastic conclusions, they also talked about it. They believe the structure might have been built 38,000 years ago.
Right.
And predated the pyramids. They're also talking about one of the reasons they believe this is chapter 149 of the Book of the Dead, supposedly describing 12 dwellings of the divine. I looked that up. I found something. And
is that a book for sale?
You can find it online.
That's interesting.
I just looked up chapter 49, Egyptian Book of the Dead. Somebody had done an interpretation, but I didn't find anything that specifically talked about a room. There was one thing talking about a mighty mountain. Mound 4 is what they call this paragraph. And it talks about a mighty mountain that is in the underworld, on which sky and earth alight, measuring 300 rods in length and 10 rods in width. Well, when you look up a rod is about 20.7 inches. So okay. It's about 517 feet by 17 by 25 feet, something like that. Nowhere near what they're saying. They're saying these rods and stuff, these underneath are going down 2,100 feet. According to, I did not find the paragraph in chapter 149. Of course, I may not have seen the full version.
That's really interesting. I feel like that would just be a fun book to read. Just anyways, I feel like that would just be an interesting read. One of the things, though, I did see in reference to this. So say we were to, for a moment, entertain the theory that that this is legit and that there is something there, right?
There's something else I found out when I was reading about the pyramids, and I understand why they equated it with Tesla stuff, which we can get into.
If we were to entertain that these columns were underneath of the pyramids, and one of the things that's interesting is they say that some of the materials that were sourced down there were like copper, and those are things that are all needed to create electricity. They found copper and quartz and some of those conductive materials. It is the power plant theory. So this is a suggested theory that the way that the pyramids were designed were not for burying the dead, but that they served a larger purpose of actually harnessing electricity, basically one giant conductor. The way that they were aligned, some say that where it falls is on these ley lines, and those have the electrical magnetic energy of the earth. I think that's really interesting, is the fact that the pyramids were actually used for energy, and that could possibly be free energy. And that lends to some of the arguments that are made of the ancient civilizations being further advanced than what we are. I find that really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know enough about the construction of the pyramids as far as the materials they use. I've heard that theory a lot. That theory has been around for a long time. I do know Tesla was working on a tower. He had a theory of free electricity by using resonance within the earth. How that ties into that structure they supposedly found is you use a rod, you have a wire winding around in a spiral with many turns around a rod, and that's supposed to pick up the resonance, the electrical resonance from the earth to go to the tower, and then the tower supposedly project it through the air using the air as an insulator. I think the air has to be heated to a certain amount. That is how he was going to give the world free energy. You just build towers everywhere. So if you take those structures that are supposedly found underneath the pyramid, you think of the pyramid as the tower, maybe.
I think that speaks to sort of that ancient technology theory that we have lost that information, and maybe it's not been necessarily lost, but so occulted and so hidden from the general public that information is just a theory now. Like his work, what he did, what he theorized on, because that would blow the big energy companies out of the water. They would be out of business if free energy existed in the way that Nikola Tesla believed and even had proof in his, you know, from his experiments that this does work. I think that would put
JP Morgan out of business. JP Morgan was financing him, and JP Morgan pulled the financing. And that's the conspiracy theory, is that yes, they free energy, there's no way they could make money off of it, so they shut it down.
That's interesting. When he died, how all of his papers that he had with all of his work actually went to Donald Trump's uncle.
He was a scientist at MIT, but it goes, you know, maybe it's possible he was asked to look at the paperwork, but yeah. Then it goes to that they created time travel, and that's how
I was going to say
about the bullet.
I know we're going down a rabbit hole in a rabbit hole in a rabbit hole, but mm-hmm. to touch on that one is a whole nother one that we should mm-hmm. cover, which is the book that was published, I think in the 1800s, called The Last President. And it was about a little boy named Barron Trump, who lived at 300 something, I mean, wherever Pennsylvania Avenue or something, whatever the address of the White House is. And the similarities between the book and reality are so interesting. It's just like, that is so crazy. It's really nuts. But
that's what feeds into the time travel that Trump right. Used it to time travel.
Yeah, which I don't know. I'm not big on time traveling, but you know, it's interesting. But to get back to Tesla, I think that's incredible. That's what he argued about the pyramids, is that the location where they were and how they were aligned with the Earth's equator and the elliptical orbit, that it optimized their ability to resonate with the planet's energy. And that's, like you were saying, how he incorporated that into his own tower design. He believed the materials like the limestone and the granite, like you were saying, are like conductors. And that's why when people ask me about Florida and why is it so weird here and this and that and the third,
it's literally in the water and the limestone.
We're on top of limestone. That's why some of the themes in my episodes already is that even Casadega, that is supposed to be one of these potential vortex energies where it's at on the ley lines. Then you even go to Coral Castle, and that's made out of limestone. But he was even, Ed Litskalnin, the man who put together Coral Castle, it was rumored that he used some of Tesla's work and mimicked that idea. So with the free energy and the electromagnetism to move the structures that he did, which would play into how the heck were they able to move these 32-ton blocks from 500 miles away with seemingly primitive tools and get all of this heavy material there. So I think it's really interesting. I think that if this winds up being something along those lines of some sort of ancient electricity tower, I think it really is, no pun intended, scratching the surface on the possibilities there, because I think it even opens up the door to, like I just said about the weight, like is there that anti-gravitational technology too when using certain mm-hmm. frequencies and things like that? I think there's so many more questions.
Well, you know, something else about Florida I found out is I was looking up magnetic anomalies. Florida had, there were three big spots, I seem to remember, at least, well, two of them for sure. One of them seemed to be centered around Tallahassee with the Apalachicola, which has a lot of Bigfoot sightings. Another one seemed to be in the Ocala area, a lot of Bigfoot sightings. There was a smaller one that went along kind of from the Green Swamp to Wakiva. I always thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. And my nanny, she had her sighting over on the East Coast. So I'm wondering mm-hmm. if it falls in that area that you were just talking about.
Yeah, I was looking up the map, but I'm not finding it. The USGS, I believe it is.
Okay.
I'll try to remember to bring a map with me to the conference. Not guaranteeing.
I think that's really interesting. You take things like that, like the possible things, and then he even extended his concept. He was hypothesizing that the builders understood the principles of the Earth. So when they were constructing it, it was made in a way that it was used to kind of exploit Earth's energy field. With the Great Pyramids, they are precisely aligned and they're facing true north, which is crazy. They align with Orion's belt, which is crazy.
Water comes into this. And something I found out I didn't know is that when you look at the map where the pyramids are on the Gaza Plateau, versus where the Nile is that they were able to transport the stones they used to build the pyramids along the Nile River. But the Nile River is quite a distance away from the pyramids. And the pyramids all seem to kind of line up at this distance. Well, it turns out a couple of scientists were looking through radar and such, and they found out that there was actually a branch of the Nile that went next to, that was closer to the pyramids. And they believe now that some of the lines they see through satellite were actually channels that had connected to this branch. Now, I guess due to drought and stuff and the sand blowing, it's covered with farmland. But they used satellite, they used radar, they also did some coring, took some cores, and they found the bed of this body of water. That would make, you know, when you talk about electricity, flowing water, quartz, limestone, that would make it a lot easier.
Absolutely. I think that's so cool.
Like you said, you could go down so many rabbit holes with the pyramids. Tesla and the energy, were they built by aliens? What kind of technology? Where did they get the materials? How are the materials? Something I thought was interesting, when you see that Sphinx, most of the time it's the image of the face of the Sphinx. It looks like a man's face that the Nazis shot the nose off. But when you get a full view of it, that head is small in comparison to the body. They actually think at one time the Sphinx had a different head, maybe a lion head, dragon head, who knows? And they carved this pharaoh's face into it because it doesn't match. And there's also stories about things being underneath the Sphinx too.
It wouldn't surprise me if there's a whole another world underneath our feet, especially with the prehistoric floods and, you know, geographic changes over time. That would not surprise me. Well, I guess I should say this last thing on the pyramids. So I saw this picture and I'm trying to find it. I think you'll like it. So it was talking about the pyramids and how they moved such heavy structures. It was a picture of, it's from the time of Babylon, and it's basically a depiction of this giant, and it's holding a lion by its neck, and it has a whip in the other hand. It says that the Nephilim giants were much taller and stronger than any human, and they could easily lift blocks of stone while building the pyramids and wrestle wild animals like lions as if they were domesticated cats. That's really interesting, just to think about if the biblical giants existed. That's an interesting possibility there too. I think that there could be a level of alchemy to it.
They were talking about when you split quartz, when you break quartz up, it ends up one side is negative, one side is positive. Sometimes they jump, but you take the two pieces that are broken. If you keep clapping them together, they will create light. It's not hot. You can't start a fire with it. And in fact, they would take a skin of an animal and make something that's like a maraca that was very, very thin skin full of these pieces of quartz. And by shaking it, they could light their way.
That's really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we've forgotten over the years.
I guess while we're talking about some strange things, the next story I have for you is supposedly all over Europe, and it touched a few different countries, actually. There was a blue spiral in the sky that was observed and recorded over the Balkans and some other European countries. So NASA claims that Elon Musk's SpaceX rocket is to blame. They claim that this was Elon's SpaceX rocket. So here's just some different pictures of some spirals that have been seen throughout the years. And so this phenomena has existed for a long time.
Well, I mean, it could be true that there's some sort of atmospheric,
that's what I want to get
turbulence
to,
that just happened to catch.
I think what's interesting to me about it though is just what the spiral symbolizes. In ancient civilizations, we see spirals that were etched into rocks and on walls and caves. These patterns have appeared all over the world. In ancient cultures, they link them to celestial events and natural phenomena, as well as, like you said, something happening in the atmosphere, right? And so an example of that is in Cacao Canyon in New Mexico. They found a petroglyph that dated all the way back to 1000 BC, and it featured these large spirals next to like a starburst like symbol. Scientists believe is that there was this supernova around 1054 BE, and it gave birth to this new Crab Nebula, which was this rare cosmic explosion that would have been bright enough for everybody on Earth to see it for weeks. With those types of things dating back, what they've noticed is that sometimes these like astrological events or something would happen in history. And the ancient peoples, they felt like that when they saw these spirals in the sky, that it was like an omen and it held this really deep significance that was popular, like as a warning for a possible cosmic event or some sort of connection. Some of them took it as a warning, and it's just really interesting. I think that this coming up, I know that they say that it's the rocket, but it's just interesting how through history, you know, you see these spirals appear in different
places. Also that some ancient peoples, the spiral was also a path, like a path to a beginning or a path out of the beginning, because there's different tribes that have stories, like the Aborigines, I think, in Australia, where they came out of the ground. But Navajos, they came out of the ground, you know, and I believe they use the spiral just to kind of show that where they came from.
Descent. But
that could go into portals, spiral portals, twisting the light.
It absolutely could. And I think one of the other things is that some of the prehistoric cultures thought that with the spiral, it was signifying a pole shift. Now, there is some actual scientific evidence to possibly back up this theory, so I kind of wanted to talk about that, which is interesting. So these cultures would maybe note that in their artwork, because that's kind of what they used to communicate at that time, but they would note these things. And so the pole shift has supposedly been happening for a while.
They're having to adjust the GPS.
Yes. So it is really happening, I think, not to freak people out.
This seems to be gradual. Now there's theories that at different times in the past that it was abrupt. So abrupt it threw everything off.
Like the Ice Age. I think they said was caused by a pole shift. But it's interesting because even last year, there was an article that came out, I think around this time, that was talking about how they said the Earth's core stopped spinning. And I was like, what? How does that, the Earth's core stop spinning? It's like, yeah, I just decided like not to come to work or something that day. I don't understand. But, or even how they know that the Earth's magnetic pole shift, but how it is speeding up actually year after year, and how many scientists believe that we are due for a full pole reversal and what that could be. And, you know, some have said that it would have minimal effects and others think it could be possibly a catastrophic event. So I don't want to be like a fear monger either, but I think that it's interesting and that we would be remiss not to at least talk about what these possible things we're seeing in the sky. I don't like to fear monger. I think we think about the end of the world and that's a really like hot button. But I think that what's also really interesting is that we really are seeing some weird stuff in the sky. Some really weird things have been happening, from the drones to just an incredible uptick in these UFO UAP experiences. It just makes me wonder too if there could be some sort of like prepping for a Project Blue Beam scenario. Or I guess before we even dive into that, what do you think about the pole shift? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, it is happening. It's shifting. They're having to make adjustments, whether it's going to flop on just in an instant or whether we're just going to continue going until it's to the other side. I don't know, because most of what I do read has this fear porn in it. I do know that the Earth and animals have been around for millions and millions of years. So obviously we didn't get wiped out every single time. Maybe the birds flew upside down or something.
Right.
You know?
I just think all the news that's coming out about it is just really interesting. The Yahoo News thing says the Earth's core may have paused and it might even be reversing. So it's like,
assumes that the Earth's core is moving, you know, when you have liquids and you spin it in a glass. That's assuming that it's doing that. I'm not certain it is.
But it's like, gosh, why are you starting to do that now after all this time? What are you doing? You know what I mean? You've been spinning one way. Why are we spinning another?
Taking the analogy of the glass. So you got it spinning one way. What happens when you stop it all of a sudden? That will cause a lot of damage, but obviously that's not what's going on because the pole is moving.
An interesting point of view to hear.
Mm-hmm.
What do flat earthers think about the Earth's core? I'm just sitting here thinking, right? I'm thinking and I'm looking at this picture, right, of the Earth's core. And I think that was one of the things that have been kind of debated in some of the, and not even necessarily, okay, flat Earth might be the hot bucket. But even with like, what is it? I'm going
to
get
Wouldn't
the
it be great
wrong.
To have them in a room?
Well, and here's the thing too, is it's almost like, it's not even so much flat, but you have even the people with the hollow earth. That's interesting. And then there's this one, I can't think of what it's called right now. It's where it kind of shows the earth is like shaped like an infinity sign.
Well, you know how you take the circle of paper and you twist it so that you're always on the same side?
I would like to get someone who's kind of an expert in that field, and I would love to chat with them about pole shift. I think that would be an interesting conversation. I think that's why it's important to keep an open mind. But to your point, I think I wish more people approach things with that attitude of you don't know everything. That's why we have our theories, and that's why they're fun to debate and pick them apart, because then I think that does help us get closer to the truth and we're able to filter it through your front porch, but figure out like, okay, this is really helpful information, or ooh, okay, I've just now ruled out why that's not possible. It helps you get closer to what is possible.
Yeah. How many times have you heard of cryptids, animals, unknown animals being discovered by some guy that says, yeah, I hunt them all the time, trying to tell a scientist they exist. The scientist, no, there's no such thing. No, it's impossible. Well, yeah, I guess it is there. That's happened a lot. And especially the last few years have shown how politics and such has, to me, has corrupted the knowledge out there. We're questioning everything now because we've been lied to so much. We don't know what is true or not anymore. You know, but what's coming out is that we have been lied to. JFK.
Yeah.
JFK, turns out the FBI always thought there was two shooters all along. But what did they do to the people that had this theory 10, 15, 20, 40, 50 years ago? There are people that have said there were two shooters and they were made fun of. They were called conspiracy theorists. Now the paper is being released and lo and behold, yeah, there were two shooters.
It's almost like every history book in the United States needs to be thrown away and rewritten with all the new information that's coming out, because there's generations of people who have been taught Lee Harvey Oswald, and that's actually not the case.
So when you look at the pyramids, I mean, there might be structures under there. There may be all this stuff that they're talking about, but I have to go back to, is it a conspiracy theory and they're hiding it from us? Or is this guy writing software that's interpreting incorrectly?
You know what? Or they discovered the Illuminati headquarters, and that's why it's so hush hush. All the reptilians are going to come after me.
I still want to see the people, center earth people, the Magnus turning people, and the flat earth people. Put them in a room together.
Or listen, come on the show, come on Dark Florida, and we'll facilitate a civilized discussion where you can present your ideas and debate if anybody's listening. So while you kind of were speaking about government involvement in cryptids, I think that's the perfect segue to this next story. And I know that this is something that you've touched on a lot, which is what would happen if Bigfoot was to be recognized by any sort of government agency. So this headline here is California aims to recognize Bigfoot as a state official cryptid. As I was reading in this story, basically it says that there's a new bill in the California State Legislature that seeks to recognize the elusive Bigfoot as the state's official cryptid. The legislation was proposed by Chris Roger, and it would designate Bigfoot as the official mascot of the Golden State, which has been a hotbed of Sasquatch sightings since, it says, the late 1950s here, but in my opinion, it predates that. This is crazy, because if you keep on reading, right, in the article, it says that it was actually supposed to be a joke. This is interesting to me, and I feel I'd be remiss not to point it out. So this would be Bill 666. It was presented on February 14th, 2025. So I think the symbolism there. Of the 666 symbolism is interesting to me. So this bill 666 about Bigfoot, Chris Rogers says, quote, in all seriousness, the bill was originally intended to be a, quote, spot bill, which would disappear like Bigfoot when we amended it. We said, given the heaviness of some of the challenges that our state, California, is facing, it has been a fun moment of levity for his colleagues and community. So he did it as a joke, he says. It is really interesting because California is where we had the Patterson-Gimlin film. And that happened at Bluff Creek and in Humboldt County. And then you have the Hooper Reservation. California is a hotbed for Bigfoot. And it's really interesting. It was kind of proposed as a joke bill.
My opinion, if Bigfoot was ever recognized by the scientific community, we would be kicked out of the woods because it would be considered harassment, to go out there and knock on trees. Somebody would set up an organization, supposedly to represent them because they need human rights, which means that they would be given vast amounts of forest area mm-hmm. for their reservations.
With the manatees, certain springs you can't swim in. So you're mm-hmm. suggesting sort of in the same sense that if they did recognize Bigfoot as a cryptid, or I don't even know how they would record an animal or endangered real species. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as something real.
Oh, it'd automatically be a danger species because they don't know how many of them exist. I think it would turn into a big mess, and a lot of this mess would be based on little to no information, depending on how a specimen was actually collected, because it's going to take a specimen.
Well, what do you think about the reports that they have specimens? Like, okay, so for example, when they talk about the Roswell crash, that they supposedly recovered an alien life form from that UFO, and that was back in like 1952. So with Bigfoot, they, in the 1800s, there was supposedly like a flurry of articles that had come out about these giant skeletons and things like that being found. Don't you think, and I guess the Smithsonian came in and took them away and they haven't been seen again. Do you think that maybe the government does already have maybe a Bigfoot body?
It's a possibility. They say there's tons of things at the Smithsonian that have never actually been categorized. In fact, I believe there's some people, that's what they do, is they go through, you know, the basements, whatever, all the different containers in the basement, they go through and they search for things. I think they've discovered stuff in there that they had no idea, you know.
Like some, the X-Files.
Yeah, something like that. I believe there's some people that they go through there because they find stuff. And at the time when it was discovered, they didn't know what it was. They put it in a box and shoved it away.
The Smithsonian's a cool, cool place to go. Fun fact for you. And for anybody listening, when you go to the Smithsonian and you look at those dinosaur bones, they are replicas. What's also really interesting, which is another topic for another day, that I'd love to chat with you about, is they've actually supposedly never recovered an entire dinosaur skeleton. That goes down a couple of other rabbit holes.
Well, there was cases where they thought they reconstructed a dinosaur skeleton, and then later on they realized, oops, they either had some parts mixed up or a combination of a couple dinosaurs.
Well, and that's interesting. That kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about the technology that was written. So you do give a computer these bones and go, okay, can you render an image based off of, because they have some of that there. And that's really interesting too, is even going back to the pyramids, they have, that's actually one of my most favorite, probably my favorite exhibit that they have at the Smithsonian, all that stuff from ancient Egypt. And they have the sarcophagus and they have different skulls and artifacts and bowls and jewelry and makeup and the whole thing. And one of the really cool things is they've taken some of the mummies that they have, and they've, using that technology, have mapped out likely what those pharaohs and some of the other people, what their faces look like. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just so cool. Take that technology and you give it a whole bunch of bones and it puts something together. And it's like, oh, here it is. And they're like, ooh, actually, we had six things in there that were from like three different things. Mm-hmm. No wonder why T-Rex has such short arms.
Oh, I that love makes a lot t-shirts. Of sense. T-Rex is a good example. I read a while back, a professor at a school was teaching archaeology and such, had his students look at a T-Rex skeleton from scratch. Said, if this was from scratch, we just discovered this, nobody's ever seen it before, what conclusions would you come to? And their conclusion came that instead of a predator, it was actually a scavenger. That, you know, that its nasal cavity and such was perfect for picking up traces of scents, the legs and the teeth for tearing out flesh and the bone. There were some other things, but yeah, that was the conclusion that the class came to, that was a scavenger, not a predator. Yeah, but that was going from scratch, looking at it with fresh eyes.
I think that's cool. I think that might mm-hmm. be the theme of tonight, is to look at things with fresh eyes. Back on the tune of Bigfoot, check this story out here. So this is from this year, and it says that camper shares a terrifying Bigfoot encounter miles away from a Sasquatch sighting hotspot. This terrified camper claims that he was left cowering in his tent after being woken up by a 15-foot Sasquatch. According to this article, Roy Aladati was solo camping in Oregon's Rogue National Forest, infamous for Sasquatch sightings, when he was awoken by a strange sound at around 11:50 p.m. He said he heard something running less than 100 yards behind his tent and initially thought it was an elk. However, listening to the creature cover vast amounts of land, concluded that a man would have been unable to do so. You or I wouldn't have been able to do that, he says, sharing his encounter with Bigfoot hunters. And it says, I did wonder what would cause the elk to run headlong through the forest at night. He thought possibly a predator like a cougar. And then about 2 minutes later, from the same direction as the elk, it says he heard three distinct percussive sounds that sounded like wood on wood. About the three pops or knocks, the wood on wood sound that he heard, he said this is something that he's never heard before. So it caught his attention. And at this point, he's listening closely. So kind of how I picture it is that he was woken up by the sound. Now he's really listening and he hears something charging through the woods. And now he's got three knocks. And it says that he camped out here numerous times in the same area. And it's 13 miles east of Butte Falls. He said that roughly a minute later, he heard three more identical knocks, but they were further away. He said another minute passed and further off in the distance, he heard three more knocks in the same pattern as the first and the second set. Then finally, he says, about another minute later, he heard one more set of identical knocks on the edge of his hearing. So that to me says like maybe close to the tent. And he said, it seemed like the same animal was making the sounds moving away from my location. He said, likely following a path of the elk. He said, at this time, he was struck by how fast that the creature was moving away from him. And that he describes the area that he was camping at, that around there, that it was a tangled mess of branches and it was tough to get through. He says he doesn't understand how a man could cover that much ground in the pitch darkness and in that fast with all the tangled mess.
I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, but I got to bring this up. The headline in the catch on the photo says that he was woken up by a 15-foot Sasquatch. Nowhere in this article does it discuss that he saw it. Also, it says the BFRO classified it as a B sighting. A sightings are when they actually see the animal. B sightings are when they hear knocks, howls, find tracks, but not the actual animal. So how do they know it was 15 feet?
That's a good point. I don't know. You're right. I don't see that. I don't know if it's mentioned somewhere else, but just to touch on maybe the three knocks for a second, I find that's really interesting because we've been discussing off air about how we're hearing reports from different people about Sasquatch communicating. If we want to just talk about the noises that we're hearing with Sasquatch and then the set of three getting those responses and how they sound like they're coming from different distances, that would be consistent with kind of what we've been thinking of. Are they signaling to one another? You know, we've theorized on what's making that noise. Are they pounding their chest? Are they making a noise with their mouth? You know, what they're using to make the noise, we don't know. That's still kind of up in the air, but we've been kind of talking about that. And so that to me was what I thought was really interesting about reading it. That kind of stood out was he talks about the different distances and things like that of the three knocks.
Yeah,
like
was it you know, herding the elk along? Was it communicating with somebody else? You know, the way he talks about it got farther and farther, the same three knocks over and over. It sounds like if it was out there, that it was herding them along.
Right. And he says that this happened over the course of 4 minutes. That's pretty quick. It's pretty consistent with other sightings. He's not claiming that this happened over the course of a few hours, that he was terrorized all through the night. From what he said is that this happened kind of started at 11:50 p.m. and seemingly is over based on his account by 11:54, because he said that these knocks were about a minute apart from each other. He said that he heard that final set of three knocks, but it was close to him. So you're right. Like, what if it's something's hurting it away? Or if there was a Sasquatch that was at the edge of his camp and then it's signaling, another one signaling to him and they're signaling back. Because he said that final three knocks came from the edge of his hearing, which indicates something was pretty close by.
I question this article because this article it's either not written very well. Probably that's the case, that it's not written very well because there's a lot of information missing, especially when they talk about it's a 15-foot Sasquatch.
Okay, so I'll just go ahead and read off a couple of the official things from this report, since we were kind of questioning some of the validity of that news article. So maybe we can get some more information out of here.
Oh, you used his name. Usually the witnesses do not want their names shown. That's unusual.
I just Googled his name and then BFRO, and it was the first thing that popped up.
That's very unusual.
It looks like this happened about a month ago. It says it happened this year, 2025, February 28th, in the state of Oregon in Jackson County. It happened off of Parker Meadow Road, which is the nearest town would be Butte Falls. He said he was motorcycle camping in the Rogue National Forest Friday night and was about 3 miles from the Forbit Ford campground. He had a fire and ate some dinner, and he went to bed around 9 p.m. At 11:52, he was woke up by the sound of what he believed was an elk running behind his tent. He says that he estimates that it was less than 100 yards away. So again, he says he's heard them in the forest before, so he wasn't alarmed, but he was wondering why an elk would be charging through the forest at that time of night. He still echoes that he thought it was a predator following him like a cougar. He says 2 minutes later, from the same direction as the elk had come, that he heard those three percussive sounds that sounded like wood on wood. He said each strike was 1 second apart. He said this is something that he's never heard before. It caught his attention and he was listening closely. And he said roughly a minute later, he heard three more identical knocks, but they were further away. And he estimated that they were approximately another 100 yards from the right of where he heard the first set of knocks. And then another minute had passed, and further off in the distance, he heard three more knocks, same pattern as the first sets. He says again, he heard that final set of knocks right on the edge of his hearing. He does say here, it seemed like the animal was making the sounds and moving away from his location, likely following the path of the elk.
This is good. See, this is it. So it was a case of the article. The article is the one that the author of the article is the one that threw in the 15 feet tall Bigfoot. The height, the guy never mentioned the height of a Bigfoot. He didn't see the Bigfoot, but the writer, I guess it for clickbait.
I mean, yeah, because it doesn't say that he visually saw it. He does say there that he had a sleepless night and the next morning he felt uneasy and got out of there as quick as he could.
Yeah, because it sounds like I think he was correct. You know, the elk come running through and then this thing's knocking and the knocking's following the elk.
Matt Moneymaker actually took the report.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. It says that he wasn't aware of anything like that. He camped in the area at least 10 times before and never had that happen.
Yeah, that's a good report. I like that. I mean, there's so many fantastic things that 15 foot struck me as fantastic right away. You hear about Bigfoot 10, 12. You've heard about big, huge ones in Canada, but that could also be somebody being scared. Somebody having a really bad idea of size, usually anywhere from 7, 8, 10, maybe 12, 15 foot. That's huge. People have no idea how big that is. Well, that right there tells me it's probably a mistake, misidentification, or in this case, it was an out and out lie because the witness never mentioned seeing the Bigfoot.
Yeah. And I think that's another thing to tell people about reports is that if you ever want to know, because as you said, things can be embellished, you can always go on the BFRO's website, go to your state, see what's happening in your area. You would be surprised at the reports that they have on there and read through it and find out what's happening around you because you never know. You might have a sighting in your area. But what's really cool is this one was less than a month ago. That was within the last 30 days.
The only other thing I found interesting is they've created woolly mice.
No, let's talk about it.
Okay. There's a company that is trying to bring back the woolly mammoth. And it's going to be impossible. There's no way they're going to be able to do that. We don't, you know, it's not Jurassic Park where you get the DNA and grow it from scratch. And not at that point. What they're trying to do is they're trying to take an Asian elephant, which I believe is the closest relative, and they're going to modify its DNA to give it the characteristics of a woolly mammoth. And they found, I believe it's 7 genes that determines the hair. They modified those genes in a mouse and it came out with woolly hair like a mammoth.
No kidding.
They'll probably be in the pet stores eventually.
Oh my gosh, I got to see what that looks like.
It's cute. Woolly mouse, woolly mice.
Oh my gosh, they are cute. I would get one. A little fun fact. I have owned a couple of pet rats.
Rats make the best pets. My kids had them. They like to hang around you. They're smart. The only problem is a lot of them come from rats that were used in scientific experiments. So every time we get a rat, they die within a couple of years from cancer. They don't live long.
They don't, and that's the unfortunate part. But they're super cute and they're super smart. They're really intelligent. They can even, a lot of people don't know, you can train them to listen to commands. Like you can teach them their name and different things.
They would come out, this one of them would come out of the bedroom. He could hear when they were eating goldfish crackers. So they would come out of the bedroom, run down the hall. And next thing you know, he's asking for a cracker. You give him a cracker, he'd run back into the bedroom and take it in his cage.
You know, my dog has a similar talent to that. Very food motivated. Are they thinking that with the advancement in this technology, like that they'll be able to somehow
They're gonna, yeah, an Asian elephant, I believe, is the closest relative to a mammoth.
Okay.
So they're using a program called CRISPR. CRISPR was created a long time ago. Don't ask me how it works, but it is the it's what's made gene editing at this level, this precise possible. People are
Right.
doing it. There was an article several years ago about biohacking, where these people are using CRISPR to biohack themselves. And there's always this fear that somebody's going to create something in a kitchen somewhere that's going to wipe us out playing with this stuff. But they use CRISPR to modify the genes, and eventually they hope to be able to turn off, turn on enough genes to what pops out is a woolly mammoth. They're as close as they're ever going to get. It's still an Asian elephant. I imagine the next question, though, is if they turn these genes off and on, will that pass on? They have a male and female and they mate. Will that pass on? Will those characteristics pass on, or will they turn off again? That I don't know. Or will the woolly mice get sold in the pet store and one night you wake up and it's got tentacles coming out because something got turned on?
You have these like mutant mice.
Mutant mice.
Oh gosh. That'll be the next pandemic. It's going to be hands
That'll
down.
be the
Woolly
next
mice.
movie.
You heard it here first. Oh my gosh.
I thought that was really cool, though, what they're doing. Well, the big thing right now they're using, that's how they caught a couple serial killers, is the 23andMe and Ancestry.com. That's how they've caught it. They've submitted the DNA to those, found a match, found a cousin, a son, a daughter. I believe in one case it was a daughter. I don't remember the name of the murderer. They were able to narrow it down, and that's how they found them. Which the scary thing right now, 23andMe, I believe, is being purchased. It's for sale right now. And depending on who purchases it, they'll have all your DNA data. There's articles out there saying there's ways you could go in and tell them to destroy your information. That doesn't make a difference. You still have your information.
But this was a lot of fun, and I wanted to do a kind of a different sort of episode. So the listeners, please let us know what you guys thought. I would love to do this more often because that's one thing is that the world is not short on stories right now, and there is so many weird things happening. So keep your eyes to the skies and look out for those spirals in the woolly mice.
And let us know if something falls out of those spirals.
Well, thank you guys. And thank you, Marian, again for joining us tonight. Your insight has been amazing. And I know
Oh,
that everybody loves it when you come on.
thank you for having me on. You know so much more than I do. Thank you, Brooke.
That is all for today's episode with some strange news. Thank you for joining us on this journey. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Dark Florida. You can follow us on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast, and you can email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com with your own strange encounters. You can support the show at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. Remember, wherever you're listening, go ahead and drop that 5-star review. It really does help the show. And until next time, stay curious and stay strange.